Yeah, it sounds like it.
Just gonna mention we're doing the boards today.
He did, like, you know, I would love
to kind of
open and stand in preparation, you know, for their bonus.
Just kidding.
You know, I just thought that, well, at least bring that to the attention.
I didn't hear it on the cigarette
and standing. It's the only.
Oh, what happened? Division.
It went to the floor. Just your preparation again. All the amendments to take off everything
for the awards program.
Think about it when I
do writers.
This is a meeting of the Health and Human Services Budget Division, and we're going to begin this morning by doing an overview of the remaining boards that we have in front of us, and we'll start with the Board of Optometry.
Good morning, Senator Berglund and Senator Lynch. I'm Lori Mickelson, the Executive Director for the Board of Optometry. And if you have the budget documents for the board in front of you, you will see that it's fairly straightforward. The only change that the Board of Optometry is requesting is for some compensation for retiring staff in fiscal year 09.
Are there any questions? It looks like, in addition to the retirement, you're asking for a compensation adjustment.
That's the standard compensation adjustment that's in the budget for all the state agencies.
So it's the 3.25%?
Correct. Yes, those amounts reflect those increases.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. The Dietetic and Nutrition Board?
I will remain for that one. I'm also the Executive Director for the Board of Dietetics and Nutrition Practice, and the budget request is the same for that agency also. The standard compensation for 3.25%, and also the retirement payout for staff in fiscal year 09. It's the same staff person that works half-time for optometry and half for dietetics, so it's
okay,
one individual.
Thank you for that clarification. We're just beginning to think everybody's going to retire next year. Are there any questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
The Board of Nursing.
Good morning, Senator Berglund, Senator Lynch, Senator Rosen. My name is Shirley Brecken, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Nursing. My presentation today is not quite as simple as Ms. Mickelson's. The Board of Nursing, I'd like to just give you just a tiny bit of history at this moment before I start talking about the requested increase. And that is that the board will very soon celebrate its 100th anniversary of regulating nursing practice in Minnesota. In fact, the legislature enacted the Nurse Practice Act on April 12th, 1907. So that's very soon. In the first 10 years that the board was in existence, it licensed 1,600 nurses. In the last 10 years, the board has actually issued 40,000 new licenses. So that's just really an example of how the board work has changed over the years. What I want to tell you about is somewhat of a paradox because, as you know, we are very much experiencing in this country a nursing shortage. Minnesota's quite fortunate in that our shortage is not nearly as great as some other parts of the country. But at the same time, we actually have more licensed nurses in Minnesota than we have ever had before. That is about 97,000 licensees. And we expect that this year,
the number of licensees will actually, with the new crop of graduates, will actually exceed 100,000 nurses. Presently, we've experienced an increase of about 20% of nurses or licensees since the year 2000. So that has really changed the work of the board over the last few years. In the last three bienniums, the base level for the funding, as you realize, has been somewhat flat. The result was that the board's response was to reduce positions at the board. We actually reduced from 36 positions in 2000 to 24 positions, and we are presently at 28 positions. In 2006, the board issued 7,000 new licenses. That was actually nearly 2,000 more than in the year 2000. Of those, 700 were foreign educated from 16 different countries, and working with foreign educated licensees certainly is challenging to the board. Yesterday, I actually met with an individual from Tanzania and spent an hour and a half with her going over her credentials and the kind of work that she needed to do to become licensed in this state. The board is requesting an increase in the base salary of $347,000 in the first year of the biennium and $364,000 in the second year of the biennium. All of these are for staff positions. They actually fall into two different areas. The first one is in the education and credentialing area. Presently, we have one education consultant who works with 60 nursing education programs in Minnesota. That's actually a 14% increase in programs since 2004, and we now have letters of intent from 10 other institutions to start nursing programs in Minnesota. So the request is for another education consultant and a support staff person. Presently, that particular section in the office has a 15% support person, and we're looking at a full-time support person for that particular area. The other area of the board's work that we are requesting position increases for is in the complaint resolution work of the board. The board has about 1,300 jurisdictional complaints per year. That's actually an increase of 28% since 2002. And yet the board has resolved 20% more cases since that date. So the request is for a position for a nursing practice specialist, another support person in that area, and a very new position to the board would be that of a legal assistant. Presently, the Attorney General's office drafts about 80% of the legal documents in the complaint resolution process, and we are experiencing a very large backload with that process. At one point this year, we actually had 85 documents waiting to be processed at the Attorney General's office. It would increase efficiency if we had a legal assistant on staff. The Board of Medical Practice actually went to that kind of an arrangement in the last biennium, and it has certainly increased their efficiency because of the ability of the staff to interact with the legal assistant in the drafting of the documents. So it's for a total of five positions. Additionally, there is a request for a compensation adjustment, and those monies would be in the area of going toward increases in insurance and salaries, rents, and retirement payouts. The board is not requesting an adjustment for the credit card transactions for online processing. Even though the board has been doing online processing since 2002, presently about 75% of our licensure processing takes place online, including 83% of nurses who renew their licenses online. That costs the board about $124,000 a year, but we are able to absorb that into our operating budget because of some adjustments that are because of what that has resulted in. Because of online processing and the use of laptop computers for board meetings, we've been able to reduce our use of paper by about 75% and our postage by about 50%. Additionally, we have decreased staff in the license processing area by 1.5 persons, so that's why we're able to compensate for that credit card transaction.
Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name, but I was wondering, you have, I thought I heard 10 new sites being proposed for nurse education.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, yes. There are 10 institutions, colleges, and universities in the state that have filed a letter of intent with the board to start a new nursing education program.
Madam Chair, do you have the nurse educators available, the people to teach the...
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, that is truly the challenge. You are correct in that, and that is one of the particular areas that the board looks at before granting approval to a program. That is that the faculty must be hired and in place at the time that students will enter the program. And so that's included in the requirements in the rules.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Do you have anything with those certifications for
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, the board is not directly involved with that, but one of the things that happened in the last legislative session was a transfer of funds from the Special Government Revenue Fund from excess nurse licensure fees to the Loan Forgiveness Program that the Department of Health administers, and it was specifically directed at increasing faculty development.
So it must be working. We're getting more.
I hope so.
More programs going.
Madam Chair, what the programs tell us is that it's sort of a case of robbing Peter to pay Paul. There's getting to be a great deal of competition between nursing education programs to recruit faculty.
Well, we did, of course, allow for people to do both in that loan forgiveness program where they could teach part-time and mm-hmm. practice part-time.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Emergency Medical Services Regulation Board.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Hedges, and I'm the Executive Director of the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board, a position I've been in approximately 9 years with the state. The role of our board is to license approximately 29,000 EMS personnel, including about 16,000 first responders, approximately 10,000 EMTs, and approximately 2,500 to 3,000 paramedics and EMT intermediates. In addition to the personnel, we also license all the ambulance services in the state and approve, of which there are approximately 300. And we also approve approximately 150 EMS training programs. We also have a variety of grants programs to support the primarily volunteer nature of our rural EMS system in Minnesota. And the majority of our budget does go to support those grant programs. In addition, as one of the 17 health licensing boards that have co-located and share services, another thing we do is our board is administering board for the Health Professional Services Program, which all the health licensing boards share, and that is the program that supports and monitors impaired health professionals to allow them to continue to work as long as they're safely monitored by a caseworker at HPSP. So our budget also includes their budget, which is funded through the licensing fees. The change items we are seeking this year are for the EMS board, we are looking for a $50,000 increase to our base budget to hire, to develop a position for a physician with emergency medical services background to be contracted for at a 0.2 FTE basis to provide service our state EMS medical director. Of the states that have state EMS medical directors, we're the only state that has relied on a volunteer board member for the last several years, and it's just too many duties to expect a volunteer to continue to perform, such as overseeing providing support to many of our rural ambulance services for medical direction, because it's very difficult to find involved medical directors in rural Minnesota, as it is with physicians in general. Another increase we're seeking is $75,000 added to our base budget to hire an emergency preparedness coordinator. Since well before September 11th, EMS has always been involved in preparing for and responding to disasters. After September 11th, when much of the federal money was made available to support disaster preparedness activities, EMS has really been somewhat short shrifted in that, only having received about 4% nationwide of some of those federal funds. About half of our staff, if not more, are involved as part of their duties in planning and coordinating emergency preparedness activities in various parts of the state, but we've seen a real shortage in trying to have someone take on the responsibility full-time to work with them, so we're seeking that money to create that new position, and also to fulfill our obligations to be on call and respond to the state's emergency operations center. Another position we're seeking through the Health Professional Services Program, which would be funded by the licensing fees or the special revenue account, is one more HPSP case manager, $75,000 for that. Again, the Health Professional Services Program caseload continues to grow as more programs are added and more health professionals are made aware of its services and its benefits, and employers become aware of its the ability to refer impaired health professionals to that program. And their caseload in documents you have before you, it says it's up to 120, but since these documents were prepared, now it's up to about 130 cases per person, per case manager, which is really unwieldy. And then the last two items are the compensation adjustment. For the EMS board, we're seeking a 2% compensation adjustment to meet the increased costs with salaries and so forth. And that is, we're seeking 2% because that's what we general fund agencies are limited to, a 2% increase. For HPSB, we're seeking a 3.25% increase. Because they are for their compensation adjustment, is they are funded through the special revenue account. We currently have about 14. We employ 14 employees and one part-time student worker. Health Professional Services Program currently has seven full-time equivalents. Are there any questions members of the committee have for me?
Ms. Hedges, maybe you could just help me understand the breakdown a little bit here. Some of this request is for general fund appropriations, and some of it's for special revenue.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Maybe first of all, we could just start out by the part of your operation that takes care of the impaired professionals. Is that funded through special revenue?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And what is the source of that special revenue?
The licensing fees at the various health licensing board.
So every board contributes to that?
Yes. Each board contributes. So the number of health, the way it's broken down is for every licensee that particular health board has in the program, that health board pays a certain fee per licensee. So it's based on the health boards that use it most. So traditionally, those health boards that have more licensees are going to and do have more enrollees in the program.
Okay, and so then what part of your request is general fund as opposed to special revenue?
Madam Chair, the part of my request that's for general fund is the $75,000 for a state EMS medical director, a 0.2 FTE, and I'm sorry, that's $50,000 for a state medical director, and $75,000 for a state emergency preparedness coordinator. And then the 2% compensation increase.
And the 2% compensation increase is how much?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that 2%, that error, there is an error on the budget pages you have in front of you. It says $27,000 this year and $54,000 next year, next fiscal year. However, the executive budget officer informed me he had made a calculation error and figured that at the 3.25, so it should read, and in the next version it will read $17,000 for fiscal year 2008 and $35,000 for fiscal year 2009.
Okay, we're glad we asked about that. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
The Physical Therapy Board.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Lunning. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Physical Therapy. I'll let you all find the pages. We do have three change items. And I think I'll start with this most straightforward one, and that is that 3.25% recommended budget increase for compensation insurance adjustment. For fiscal year 08, that's $5,000, and for fiscal year 09, it's $11,000. The second item is an operating budget increase for fiscal year 08 and for fiscal year 09, $12,000 per year, and that $12,000 is $8,000 of it is to cover our credit card handling charges. We had 81% of our renewals done online this year, and those were the credit card fees. The other $4,000 in that $12,000 are for, we haven't so much had a huge increase in the numbers of complaints, but we've had an increase in the complexity of the complaints and the numbers of complaints that have gone over to the Office of Administrative Hearings, and so we're asking for $4,000 in that non-salary operating budget to cover those things. And then the most complicated and exciting, the third item is the Board of Physical Therapy will be bringing a bill forward this year for licensure of physical therapist assistants. And the budget items are fiscal year 08, a $17,000 one-time startup, and that would be to do the modifications of our database, some minor rule revisions, and then some communications with licensees and getting the startup. And then for each year, fiscal year 08 and 09, it would be $65,000 per year, and we're asking for an additional staff member for that. And I don't know quite how much information this committee wants about licensing PT assistants. I'd love to share some, so either stop me or ask more questions if you want more.
We just want the money information.
Okay, then you've got the money. That's what I thought you might want.
We don't quite have all the money information.
Okay.
So these assistants that will be licensed or registered or something.
They will.
Are they proposed to be paying a fee also?
Yes, their fee will be equal to what the physical therapists are paying. It's a fee rate that has been the same since 1994, but we anticipate we'll be able to cover the expenses of regulating them, bringing them in at exactly the same fees as the physical therapists currently pay.
So this additional staff person and this one-time startup fund will be recouped through those fees that you anticipate generating.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. The Podiatry Medicine Board.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Julie Vangsness, and I'm the County Coordinator for the Health Licensing Boards. I'm here to represent the Board of Podiatric Medicine. Keith, their Executive Director, is unable to attend today. There are basically two items, changes for this board. The first one is the compensation increase of 3.25% of salary for both fiscal year 08, $1,000 the first year and $3,000 the second year. And then the second item is anticipated retirement costs of $7,000 in fiscal year 09 for the executive director who is planning on retiring. Are there any questions?
Any questions? If not, thank you very much. The Psychology Board.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pauline Walker Singleton, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center of Psychology. As you all know, the Psychology Board regulates people that practice psychology in the state. And this budget only requests two change items this year, and we have not requested a change item since fiscal year 2003. the first change item has to do with several items. We've noticed a change in the type of complaints that we are receiving, and we're receiving a lot more cases that involve competency, and as a result, they're more involved and difficult to settle. Without the help of expert witnesses, people who can attest to the standard of care in the practicing community. We have members of committee of a complaint resolution committee that have certain amount of expertise in their fields, but there are sometimes fields of practice that are not represented on the committee, and we'll have to be able to hire individuals that can give us more expert opinions in certain of these specialty areas. We also finding that there are cases that are going to the hearing stage that in order to settle them and mitigate the costs, we can do that also with the help of experts. And so part of that change item has to do with covering those costs. In addition, the board is also attempting to change rules that have not been changed since 1993, and we are hoping to cover the cost of the hearings and the other incidental items that have to do with rulemaking in the next biennium. excuse me. Also, as the agency progresses more towards more online services to the public and to our licensees, we are requesting funding so that we are able to cover the costs associated with online verifications, online renewals, and which have really become the cost of doing business in the regulation of professionals these days. all of these three projects constitute the reason for our first change item, the one that's entitled Operating Budget Increases. The second change item has to do with the standard compensation adjustments, and that 3.25%. And those are mainly to cover the costs, the compensation costs, and incidental to labor agreements and increases in insurance costs and that sort of thing. In order to cover the cost of all of these change items, we have no plans at all to increase fees. one of our licensees happens to be at the table, and she's nodding to that. The actual total receipts that we plan to collect, we are projecting, remain the same. And what we have done is worked out plans with the Attorney General's office so that we are able to cover the cost of their services. And also we are decreasing the line item that that has to do with the cost that we pay the AGs for their services. And so we're proposing that we take that cost and move it into our direct expense area of the budget, and therefore the entire cost of the change item would not represent any change to the bottom line. I think that's about it. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Any questions? No, thank you very much. The Veterinary Medicine Board.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. John King, and I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Veterinary Medicine. The Minnesota Board of Veterinary Medicine was established in 1894 and currently licenses over 3,000 veterinarians and has an employee base of 1.75 FTE. We have three change items this year. The first one is the standard 3.25 compensation and insurance adjustment that would carry on both 08 and 09. Second one is a request to increase spending authority for operations, addressing two contested cases that are going on right now, increased complexity of complaints and number of complaints, and also defending a lawsuit that's currently being brought against the Board of Veterinary Medicine. And then the third change item is to increase or create two specific fees for individuals that use the services of the Board of Veterinary Medicine. One of those would be for sending a license verification to another state. For instance, a veterinarian that's licensed in Minnesota is seeking licensure in another state. A license verification needs to be sent to that state. The other thing would be to require or receive a small amount, $50, from a continuing education sponsor that's seeking approval of the continuing education course. And both of those fees are standard, are the industry standard, both with many of the health licensing boards in Minnesota and across the nation. Are there any questions?
So, Dr. King, will you have a bill to come forward to authorize these new fees?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that's been already submitted in the House and the Senate and been introduced. Has not received a committee hearing yet.
Okay. Any other questions?
Where is it?
Okay. Thank you very much. The Board of Social Work.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Frank Merriman. I'm Executive Director of the Board of Social Work. The Board of Social Work regulates approximately 10,000 social workers in the state. All of our fees come from the all of our appropriations come from the Special Revenue Fund, and those monies are recouped through fees that we assess to licensees and applicants. The only change item that we have in our budget request this time is the 3.25% compensation adjustment recommended by the governor. That would amount for us to a $24,000 increase for fiscal year 2008 and an increase of $49,000 for fiscal year 2009. That concludes my comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Behavioral Health and Therapy Board.
Thank you.
first.
In the book.
Yes.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Carrie Rexigal, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. The board was created in 2003 and licenses professional counselors. Those are individuals with a master's or a doctoral degree in counseling. And the second licensure program is alcohol and drug counselors. We're a fairly small licensing board. At present, there are 423 professional counselors and about 1,600 alcohol and drug counselors. And like the other health licensing boards, we receive a direct appropriation from the special revenue fund and not the general fund, and we must collect revenue through licensure fees. Unlike the other boards, my board has struggled financially. Both programs have had significant debt since their inception. The Department of Health originally licensed the alcohol and drug counselors since 1998, and I inherited the program in 2005. And so the recommendation in the change item for our board is a 40% decrease in our base budget. And also the second part is a series of fee increases and new fees that we hope will generate about $33,000.
Do you want to just go over the fee increases
Sure.
and how you arrived at them?
That's $33,000. Well, the first one is the creation of a new fee. We split the application and initial license fee into two parts. And it was our legislative committee that met to talk about the fees and to brainstorm about how we might generate additional revenue. But so for somebody applying for licensure, instead of $250, they would pay a $150 application fee, and then if licensed, $250 for their first license. And the annual renewal fee was increased from $200 to $250. The inactive renewal fee increased from $100 to $125. And licensure verification fee increased from $10 to $25 for LPCs. Alcohol and drug counselor verification fee was always $25. So that's in line with the other program. Increase from $10 to $25 if someone requests a duplicate certificate or license. And we spend a fair amount of time reviewing continuing ed sponsor applications for programs offered to our counselors, and so we are proposing a $60 fee for that, and other licensing boards have a similar fee to review CE applications. And the alcohol and drug counseling program did not have a fee for obtaining duplicate certificates of licenses, and so we created one, a $25 fee. And we have a bill currently being jacketed now that will address the new fees.
Any questions? Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair, thank you. Ms. Rexigal, is that right?
Rexigal.
I have a question that came from a constituent out in Greater Minnesota about the licensing of these people that are wanting to become counselors, drug counselors. Are you having a shortage of people that can go out and do the testing?
The examination for
the
licensure.
Examination, right.
The Minnesota Certification Board, which is not a state agency, is the entity that provides the exams for licensure, both the oral or written exam. And there's another organization, the Professional Association March for the Drug Counselors, offers another national exam, just the written. So I don't have complete information on that issue. Did this individual have a problem getting their exam completed?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Yes, they are looking for counselors, as you know. And and it seems like the exams aren't offered that much. And they, I'm not sure how the structure is for these people to come out to give the exams, but there's something about them not getting reimbursed enough, or there's a shortage of people to do the exams, but it's gotten to be, this did come up down in my district. So I know out in greater Minnesota, it's becoming an issue of people that want to be certified and they can't get the certification on time or get a proper exam done in their locale. So I thought maybe you knew.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I don't, but I could provide you with information.
That would be great. Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much. Well, I think that completes the overview of the budget recommendations for the boards. And the next couple of items, we have had a request from Senator Cohen and Senator Langseth for the divisions to send a letter recommending what projects we believe should be in the capital budget this year. Now, remember, this is not a bonding year. I mean, it's not a big bonding bill. And as far as I could tell, we only have two bills in our committee on that issue, both relating to the Veterans Homes Board. And so I thought we would hear those and then have some discussion about what kind of a letter you'd like me to send. And is Patricia Torres Ray here?
Hmm? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Come on up, Senator.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I noticed that there's a couple of amendments. Do you want, we want to move those first to get the bill into the shape that Senator Torres Ray wants?
A1 amendment. Senator Torres Ray, would you like to have your amendments adopted right away, or do you want to explain the bill first?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I would like to move the amendments first.
Okay, Senator Coring, are you offering that motion then?
Madam Chair, I would. Do you want to move them both at the same time or one at a time?
We can do them together.
Okay.
I guess we just need the A1.
Just the A1?
The other one is obsolete.
Okay.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, then I would so move the A1 amendment to Senate File 479.
Is there any discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Today, I am here to present Senate File 479 relating to veterans' homes and expanding the use of certain appropriations. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate File 479 expands the permitted uses of $2.2 million that were received from the federal government by the state of Minnesota as a reimbursement for state capital expenditures at the state veterans' homes. Legislation that was adopted in 2005 authorized the federal money to be used for asset preservation. The bills also allowed the money to be used for repairs and betterment at the homes. And I am here today with Mr. Cox, who will expand on this. And this, as I understand, is just a technical provision so that the state could be will be able to use the money that we received a year ago.
Madam Chair, good morning, committee. What we have here is a
Mr. language. Cox, I think you want to introduce yourself.
Oh, my name's Chip Cox. I'm the interim executive director of the Veterans Home Board.
Welcome, Mr. Cox.
Thank you. What we're doing is cleaning up some language on the $2.2 million. This money was received from the federal government from the 65% matching funds. The state put in 35%. The federal government put in 65% for various projects throughout the state. Of that money returned, 2.2 was earmarked to be used for the what we thought was a repair and betterment of some areas of our campuses. What turned out is it came out under the definition of asset preservation, and we need to use it for repair and betterment funds.
Maybe you could just explain to the committee what the difference is.
Asset preservation is mainly the envelope of a building, roofs, bricks, mortar, those types of things, doors, windows. Repair and betterment can be used for interior projects, ceilings, floors, walls, those types of things. So we do have a big need at many of our campuses for some repair and betterment funds to be made available as soon as possible. We have some projects that are waiting to be completed or started that will benefit the residents living at those facilities.
Madam Chair?
Questions? Senator Prettner-Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Mr. Cox, so is this money that was already allocated in a prior bonding year?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, this has already been allocated.
Okay.
Any other questions? Mr. Cox, I guess I have a question about the governor's budget request for $8 million new dollars for repairs and betterments at the veterans' homes. Is that a different bill than this bill, or?
Madam Chair,
Where is that in the process around here?
Madam Chair, it is a different bill. This is a separate bill, 2.2. The $8 million is coming through the process. It is the governor's recommendation at this time that the veterans' homes receive an additional $8 million for R&B projects.
Do you know what committee that bill's in the Senate?
It's part of this bill here.
It's part of this
Part of this committee, yes.
It's in this committee or it's in this bill?
It's in this committee, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was part of the presentation that we made last week here.
Right, but do you have a bill specifically on it? That was just a presentation of a budget page.
Not at this time, as I understand.
Are you going to? Are you planning to?
I believe so.
When would we be expecting to see that? Because I was hoping we would be looking at everything today and making our recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee by having it kind of in front of us all at one time, but we don't actually have the bill for the $8 million as far as I can. I mean, we haven't been able to find it anywhere, so.
Madam Chair, as you can tell, I'm not prepared to speak on that $8 million this morning, but I'll get back to you.
Well, I guess the best laid plans. Are there any questions on this bill? If not, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Excuse me, I just have a question, a technical question with respect to moving this bill. So is this going to be tabled until next time, or... I don't know. I would like to have a clarification about this.
Senator Torres-Ray, my understanding is that the regular budget bill will not contain capital funds, that will be handled in the Capital Investment Committee. And so what we're going to do after we hear the next bill, I guess, is at least to try to discuss what we would recommend to the Capital Investment Committee. And then we would take a motion to send the bills there.
I see. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Erickson-Robes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now I'm confused a little bit. It seems to me the other bill that is not being presented today is a request for additional funds, but this is money that's already been appropriated from another year. And aren't you just asking for a language change, a technical change on how to use the money? You already have the money?
That is correct.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, so I'm not understanding why we can't pass this one today or why that would need to be attached to another bill that requests additional new dollars.
I think that's my question, Madam Chair, members
of the
committee.
Well, I guess since the money's already been appropriated, it probably wouldn't need to be. I mean,
this is not, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is not new money. This is existing money that was given to the state as a reimbursement.
Right.
And we just need to change these technical terms so that the state can use it. So we're not asking for a new appropriation of new money.
Right, I understand. I guess we don't get these requests very often. Usually these things are handled in the Capital Investment Committee. But I guess you're right, Senator Ray. Your preference would be that we would move the bill into the full Finance Committee.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. That would be
Senator
my preference.
Senator Erickson-Ropes, would you like to make that motion then?
I so move Senate File 479 be passed
as amended.
As amended, be passed by this committee and moved on to capital investment.
No, it'd be the full Finance Committee.
Finance Committee, thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
And the next one is Senate File 735, Senator Sieben. Before we start in on Senate File 735, Mr. Cox, I have the answer to my question. The governor's recommendation for your additional $8 million in repairs and betterments monies is in the governor's budget bill. So it's not a separate bill, separate from the governor's main budget bill, which most of which I don't believe is got capital investment money in it. Unfortunate they put it together that way. And we don't have that bill. That's in Senator Marty's policy committee. And I don't know when we will be getting that bill exactly. So I guess my recommendation to you would be that we ask you to make a presentation about that, if you're not prepared to do that today, at a future meeting, sometime soon, so that we could then fulfill our responsibility of prioritizing and making recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee.
Madam Chair, I will certainly do that.
I think we'll just handle it without the bill in front of us. We can get copies of it, but we're not actually... We're just sending recommendations, is my understanding, to the Capital Investment Committee. Senator Sieben, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Senate File 735 is an appropriation request or a bonding request for $7 million for the construction of 30 supportive housing units at the Hastings Veterans Home. In last year's bonding bill, members and Madam Chair, $700,000 was appropriated for initial design and design for that project. The Capital Investment Committee has toured the Hastings Veterans Home and seen the need and the need for this project. And I guess with that, I'll turn it over to Chip Grannis, who's also the interim director at the Hastings Veterans Home, to comment more on the proposal.
Mr. Cox.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're trying to build a supportive housing unit on the campus of the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings. This is a supportive housing unit which will have initially 30 units that will serve veterans. We would like to see this building go up because we have a big need for housing in Dakota County, and especially safe housing for veterans. As you know, we have a veterans home in Hastings, and we have a board and care. It is licensed as a board and care. Many of our people come to us with different needs, medically, psychological, or chemically dependency issues. We work very hard with those people. We work very hard with the VA hospital. We get them back on the right track. They take care of their financial or their medical issues. They're ready to discharge, and there's no place for those people to discharge to that is a good, safe environment. What happens quite often is that we have a relapse or a medical issue takes over due to lack of follow-through with care. What we believe we can do if we build a supportive housing campus, a supportive housing program on the campus of the Veterans Home in Hastings, we can provide that good, solid housing with services that these veterans need. We also look at our current veterans, but we look down the road at our veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan who are going to have some issues that we feel we can assist with through this this supportive housing program. I guess that's pretty much, and if there's questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Yeah, I have two questions, Mr. Cox. The first question, is this in the governor's budget recommendation for this year?
Madam Chair, no, it's not.
And Mr. Cox, the second question is, are you anticipating federal funding to support the state funding going into this project?
Madam Chair, this project does not fit the requirements of the federal funding, the 65% match. So we are not anticipating any federal funding at this time.
Well, I guess I actually have a third question then, Mr. Cox. Did this request go into the governor's office to be included in the capital bill this year?
Madam Chair, no, it did not.
Senator Sieben, is it possible that this might be a better recommendation for next year when we have the bigger bonding bill?
Chairwoman Berglund, I guess I would leave that up to your discretion, and maybe by some of the testimony that may be the case. There certainly is a significant need for this. The Hastings Veterans Home is, it's my understanding, is turning away veterans now because there isn't enough space in the current facility, and there's also a need for this type of these efficiency apartments can serve almost as a more transitional role so that it's not as full service care as in the actual home, but it's also some services that are needed, so it's helpful for those veterans who maybe don't need all of the care of a veterans home but aren't yet ready to live on their own.
Madam Chair, there is a large homeless population of veterans out in the community. We feel we can meet their needs through this supportive housing program. And I guess the question I have to ask is, do we want to wait another year to find funding to start building a housing program for these veterans?
Well, I guess that's a discussion that we have to have. I do know that there is a lot of focus on this year's bonding bill on emergencies and repairs and betterments, since repairs and betterments have been... we might say underfunded in past bonding cycles. I think your board testified to that when you were in front of us earlier with your total budget request from the governor.
Madam Chair.
Questions?
How much is the request?
$7 million.
$7 million.
$7 million. Madam Chair, if there's no more questions, I would so move that Senate File 735 be laid over. And
I think we need to get the other presentation of the other governor's budget requests. So I think that's what we'll do at this time, is to just lay this over, and then we'll take up a discussion of it once we get the presentation of the repairs and betterments request from the governor's budget. And then we'll try and do that this week. So I hope, Mr. Cox, you could be ready for that this week so that we can not hold the Capital Investment Committee up. Questions?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sieben and Mr. Cox, I'm not sure exactly what the best timing for this is, as we've talked about this year and next year. However, I just do want to state that Senator Rosen and I were part of a group that went out last night and toured four different homeless shelters. And we did talk a bit about homeless veterans and the fact that we have so many returning veterans now from Afghanistan and Iraq. And we're going to be dealing with a whole new population of people coming back and needing services, and probably in a very serious way, because we recognize now what post-traumatic stress syndrome is and some of the other associated challenges that veterans deal with today that they weren't, or we weren't acknowledging 20 years ago. So I do know that the need exists, and it's a tremendous need. So I certainly support the project. I'm not sure in terms of the timing, but I just did want to advocate for the need.
Mr. Cox, one other question. The supportive housing units that were built in conjunction with the Minneapolis Veterans Home, did they receive any federal funding?
Madam Chair, that was at the Veterans Hospital.
Right.
That they built those.
Right.
And that was pretty much done through private investors.
Well, it was a bonding request to the legislature also at the time.
And there was some state money put into that as well.
But do you know if there was any federal money at that time?
I'm unaware. I know the federal government basically said that they could build the project on their property. I'm not sure if the federal government put money into that project or
maybe
not.
Maybe you could check on that, and the next time you come back, maybe we could get a little bit more information on that. Okay, so the motion is to lay the bill over. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Thank you very much to
Thank
both
you.
Of you.
Members.
Next bill we have on our agenda is Senate File 964, Senator Sharon.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Where to get it? But...
My name is Kathy Sharon. I'm here to present Senate File 964. This is a request for appropriations from the general fund to support programs that serve very, very high-risk women. This bill asks for continued funding through the Department of Human Services for three programs that serve women. One of the programs is in the urban area for urban women called the Circle of Women. The second is in the rural area and serves rural women. It's called Project Harmony, and it's in Meeker, McLeod, and Sibley County. And the third program is focused on American Indian women. The desire of this project also, of this proposal also, is to take this project, which is fairly tried and true and has some very successful outcomes, and to clone the project and to move it into the northern part of the state. Just as a way of background, these are programs that work with the very poorest women who are at high risk and need many services wrapped around them in order to improve the environment for their children and to improve the chance for their future children to have a successful parenting environment. This is about family permanency. And without these programs, what we will hear from the testifiers is that they're likely to become foster children. This is a model that has very positive outcomes that will be spoken to today, and they can be cloned. And it is a tried-and-true program that serves very high-risk women in a very effective way.
Senator, did you want to call on your witnesses in the order you'd like them, or do you want me to call on them?
I'd be happy to introduce you to, Madam Chair, to Carrie Fletcher, who is the Regional Resource Coordinator in Southern Minnesota.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, I am Carrie Fletcher. I am a parent of children that we adopted who have fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, and I'm a staff member of the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome. I would like to share briefly with you the impact that fetal alcohol spectrum disorders has had on my life. My parents were licensed to provide foster care when I was 13 years old. They fostered and eventually adopted a sibling group of four, all prenatally exposed to alcohol but never diagnosed with fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, as this was in the 70s and fetal alcohol syndrome was just being identified at that time. They are now all in their 30s. Two are doing fairly well because of the supports that they have in their life, but two are really struggling with addictions themselves. My sister's 16-year-old son is suspected of having a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, so the generational impact continues in my family. My husband and I did foster care in Blue Earth County for 16 years, and we adopted two of our foster children. Ben is 9 years old, and Anna is 4 years old. They have different birth fathers, but the same birth mother. Both are on the spectrum as having disorders associated with prenatal exposure to alcohol. My son Ben continues to struggles to maintain appropriate behavior, especially in the classroom. He has significant problems with impulse control, attention, and judgment. He has an average IQ, as do most people with this disability. But he has problems that require him to have special education services. He needs a one-to-one aid in order to maintain appropriate behavior and be in the classroom setting. He requires speech therapy, occupational therapy, and personal care attendance services. My daughter Anna is in preschool this year, but she has already received years of special education services, occupational and speech therapy, social skills therapy, and now is starting physical therapy. She has significant problems because of her prenatal exposure to alcohol with her sensory system. She's extremely hyperactive and has significant sleep disorders. Parenting her is exhausting, but we're committed to keeping her safe and raising her in an environment that's supportive so that we can try to minimize the secondary disabilities associated with this disability. Some of those are disrupted school experiences, mental health disorders. That's at a rate of like 95% of people, or 94% of people with an FASD will have a mental health problem. Troubles with the law, and then addictions and drug use and alcohol use themselves. I work in southern Minnesota for the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, and two of my main responsibilities are connecting families for support and training parents and professionals about this disability. Parenting a child with FASD has been described as trying to find your way around Cincinnati with a roadmap of Denver. And I hear from parents all the time who would be lost without an organization like ours. Susan Carlson, the former First Lady of Minnesota and the board president and founder of MOFAS, has given each of you a letter, I believe you just received those, explaining why MOFAS, the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, strongly supports Senate File 964, House File 286, even though it does not directly benefit our organization. The governor, in his 2007-2008 budget, has proposed an increase of funding for the statewide FASD initiative administered by MOFAS of $900,000 per year. That's a separate issue from this bill. This would move Minnesota towards a statewide infrastructure for FASD intervention and prevention services and expand and support programs like the one mentioned in this bill we are discussing today. Funding for both of these initiatives is critical in our state. FASD is 100% preventable, but it's currently estimated to be affecting one in every 100 citizens of our state. Today's legislation addresses the need among women at high risk for having children with an FASD, but the problem expands beyond the population being addressed by this one project, and it's imperative that we continue to address and expand the services that MOFAS is providing in the state. And if anybody has any questions about the difference between these two initiatives, we just wanted to kind of explain the difference. We are supporting this, but it is separate from the funding that Governor Pawlenty has requested. I do have Sarah Messalt with me, who's the executive director at MOFAS.
Are there any questions? Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would now like to introduce to the committee Dr. Amos Dienard, a person who has, I think, dedicated his life to using his professional expertise to care for the very poorest and most high-risk population in this state.
Madam Chair, Chairwoman, and distinguished members of the committee, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come here today to briefly talk about three programs that are currently funded by the Department of Human Services under one umbrella. Circle of Women, which is where the grantee is the University of Minnesota, Project Harmony in Sibley McLeod and Meeker counties, and the American Indian Family Center in St. Paul. Our project at the university has been funded since 1991, when under the broad umbrella of FAS, and I'm here today to absolutely totally support the MOFAS project. We are doing some things in common and some things are a bit different. We get our clients for Circle of Women from Drug Court, from Project Child, from Child Protection Units. The mothers have been identified during pregnancy or shortly after delivery as substance users. For that child, we have no way to impact that child's future because of the exposures to the drugs. We can hopefully keep the mom, if she gets pregnant again, from using drugs during the next pregnancy. Alcohol is one of the drugs, but crack cocaine, heroin, methamphetamines, our clients are by and large poly drug users, and we are absolutely convinced that some of our moms are FAE. So I'm here today primarily to talk about A Circle of Women, which is the project that I know best. And I have, they're circulating information about Project Harmony and about the American Family Indian Center project, and also a set of data that were developed by my staff starting 5 years ago when I testified at a House committee and made the statement, I believe if our program could be cloned and positioned elsewhere in the state, we would save the state money. Among other things, we are keeping kids out of foster care. We're keeping kids with their biologic parents rather than having them lost to termination of parental rights and being adopted. I didn't get out of the room before Representative Abler caught up with me and said, you need to tell me how to save the state money. So we sat down as a group and said, okay, what should our outcomes look like? What outcomes should we look for? And then after we defined the outcomes, we went to our files and looked for the data and have tracked it quarterly ever since. And I think our outcomes are pretty respectable in terms of keeping kids out of foster care, keeping kids with their biologic mothers, keeping mothers more sober than not sober, keeping them out of the criminal justice system. One judge told a mom, if I didn't know you were part of A Circle of Women, I would put your child in foster care. But for the moment, I'm going to leave him with you in the hopes that things will go well because you are part of Circle of Women. I spoke some weeks ago with Senator Lurie about the prospects and the idea of taking and cloning Circle of Women and putting it up in his three-county district. I then called the heads of public health, nursing, and child protection for all three units and said, here's what we do in Minneapolis. Would you see this valuable in your areas? And the answer uniformly was yes. We have disjointed services and nothing like what you're doing, but we certainly have the same kinds of need that you have, although it may not be to the same degree because of the population base. So my desire is not only to maintain the funding for the three programs that I'm here representing for the next biennium, I'm hoping to get some other dollars from the Chemical Health Division of DHS to add a mental health, chemical health component to our program, but I would very much like the challenge of cloning our program and putting it in another part of the state to see if we can get comparable outcomes. If it works up there, there's no reason why it wouldn't work similarly in the rest of the state by districts. I know time is limited. I have brought two of our clients with us today if you'd like to hear them talk a moment briefly about their experiences with Circle, but if time is limited, I'll field questions. And
We would be happy to hear from the participants. Are there any questions for Dr. Dinard? Okay, if not, why don't we?
Okay, well then, first I'd like to call Carla Murray to the microphone.
You stay.
Oh, okay.
I entered the Circle of Women 2 years ago. I came out of Hennepin County Hospital. I just gave birth to a son that was cocaine addicted, and I entered the Circle of Women, which helped me to get my son back, just to help me to stay sober within the last 2 years. It helped me to have a healthy relationship with my children, just to become self-sufficient again beyond the drugs was a lot of help for me. Being able to find resources, other things to do besides using was what helped me out a lot, because after you come out of these things, you think that you're the only one and no one can help you and there's nothing else that you can do. But a circle of women showed me that there was other things besides using and going back to my past life, which helped me to become a better person, is what I want to say. And there's a lot of younger women, I would say younger than me, that's in need of this program right now. And I just want to say it's a wonderful program. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, is there time for one more person?
Sure. Are there any questions for Carla?
Oh, sorry.
If not, thank you very much for coming today, and thanks for the success that you're having.
Thank you.
Moment.
For Circle of Women. Oh, there's. Okay. I wrote it on paper. I hope you don't.
No, that's okay. And just take your time. Don't be nervous. Just remember, we work for you.
Euthena Slober, and I also entered a program through child protection. I'm a single mother. When I entered the program, I was hesitant of how or what I'll get out of it. I was scared and lost. I was going through my first pregnancy and didn't have any support. I didn't have any support I can trust on. I met many women there that gave me the strength and confidence that I longed for. Circle of Women is a place where I know I can grow. The program helped me with different issues as a mother and a woman. The environment has a comfortable setting which encourages me to open up about the issues I have as a parent and as a person. I need help in different categories. The person of whom I worked with been there through my ups and downs. She gave me a lot of advice and opportunity to make the right decisions in my life. Time has passed and I continue to go to Circle of Women. The program is convenient for my schedule and the staff there are very helpful. The thing that makes the program work for myself is the other mothers and the advice I get from staff. I've been helped in many different resources, and I've made positive friends that can relate to me and my parenting issues. The home visits build the environment to be a better parent. The one-on-ones help me to focus more on what I want in life. Most of all, the videotaping and pictures are the highlight of being the best mother I can be, by creating memories I can pass on to my children. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Good luck to you.
Thank you.
I should mention that our program is structured such that every other week mothers come together for a meal and a couple of hours of talking together. Then their children go off to with a child care provider, and the mothers talk then with the facilitators. All of our facilitators are trained as doulas, so if a mother comes into the program pregnant and is all by herself, we have someone who can assist her during pregnancy and after pregnancy. On the alternate weeks, the facilitators go to the homes and do, using the seeing is believing concept, we're videotaping the moms at play and then using the videotapes as a way of having the moms decide if they are being responsive to the child's cues or not. And we serial videotape so when moms leave the program, when the children are three, they take the video with them as a memento of their experience with child, with Circle of Women, but also as a way of observing for themselves again the successes they made over time in being responsive to their children's cues. Thank you. I'll field any questions anyone may want to throw my way.
Question, Senator Laurie.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Deinhardt. I would like to speak to our conversation, and I really do look forward to trying to find a way to replicate this type of service across greater Minnesota. I know firsthand that the need is there, and this is a very unique approach to keeping families together and helping them to move forward in a positive way. And think about what the future will look like for them and their kids and outside of the court system, you know, and really a positive way. So I do look forward to working together to try to replicate this and meet some of the needs across Minnesota. So thank you for bringing this forward today.
Let's make it happen.
Other questions? I have one question. The bill has a blank appropriation, and you know, not that we always can fill them in the way you like, but we'd like to know what you were requesting.
You were looking towards your largesse to just fill in the blank. I believe at the present moment that DHS, for the three programs, Circle, Project Harmony, and the St. Paul program, I think it's $425,000 a year, I think. Ours, I know, is $200,001 a year for 3 years that we've had current funding. I think that in terms of the replication of our model, in the first 2 years getting it started, I think we could do it for $200 or less. I'm guessing it's off the top of my head, but we're running our program right now at a caseload of the report you've got in front of you of our data set. It shows 43 clients last quarter and 35, it's 43 two quarters ago and 35 the last quarter. The 35 is down because we were down a facilitator for two-thirds of the quarter, and we've got a waiting list now. So we're in the process of hiring a new facilitator and doing more outreach, so we'll cover our waiting list and then go back and try to get more clients. And so we're up and running, and at $200,000, I think getting started and ramping up, we could do it for less in the first 2 years. Oh, pardon? I'm going to say I think we could probably do it off the top of my head for $150,000 to get up and running up in the Tyne, Kennebec, and Carlton counties. Okay.
So that's, Madam Chair.
Senator Laurie.
That's in addition to the current $425,000.
Yeah, and so, I may be off on what Project Harmony and the other one are getting. I know what ours is, and I think I heard the other day that the total for the three is $425,000, but I may be off of you at a few dollars.
So we're talking, to fill in the blank would be $575,000 is what I'm hearing.
So, Madam Chair, it's a reappropriation of the money that's already up until...
Well, it's renewing the appropriation. Right. The appropriation, as I understand it, is sunsetting.
That's correct.
For the existing programs, and then there is a desire to expand the program.
That's correct. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay. So, a little good news. Apparently, there is some confusion. The $425,000 is in the base. And apparently, even the department seems a little confused about that. But the money apparently is in the base.
If it's in the base, then, Madam Chair, I and a lot of other people were given misinformation.
I believe that's true.
And I have for some weeks now thought that it was sunsetting, and that's been confirmed along the line, and it's wonderful news, but it's brand new news.
But maybe we do have someone here from the department, and I think it might be good to get this on the record from.
But the notion of cloning is a new concept. That would not be in the base.
Right. So whoever's here from the department that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Nelson. I work for the Children and Families Services business in the Department of Human Services. This grant at a level of $400,000 is in the base. At 400,000 is in the base of the department's budget.
And has it ever been a higher amount? I mean, is it? Not, I mean, where did the 425 come from? Is that just somebody's error?
That's a number that I thought I heard last week, but if it's in the books it says 400, then I was wrong. It's 400.
There could be some confusion because the grant would carry over across fiscal years. So in a given fiscal year, it might be a little more than 400 and a little less than the prior fiscal year.
Okay.
So it's 400 a year in the base, and it's currently serving the three programs that are mentioned in the appropriation language, roughly at 200 plus for the Circle of Women program.
Our funding for the last 2 years has been 200. The year before that was 150. We were given 200, but there wasn't 200 to turn over, so we went for 150 in the first of the three-year period. But I think that cuts across biennia.
And, Madam Chair, if I could add, this program was in the original grouping of programs that was consolidated as part of the Children and Community Services grants.
Right, we weren't too happy about that idea.
And you acted on that, and it was pulled out of uh-huh. that consolidation, but it was cut a little for 1 year. But then the base was restored in the tracking and has continued and will continue without further action.
Okay, so the need here would only be for new money to expand the program if the committee can find $150,000 new dollars. Is that the idea here?
And Madam Chair, with the new information, I think that accurately describes what our request would be.
And then the date in the bill is, would just ask you to look at that.
No, that July 1st, 2008 would have to be 2007 because our current funding ends June 30th of this year. All three programs are out of funds as of June 30th, except that if it's in the base, it's going to be renewed for 2 years, from 07 to 09.
So the new money to start the new program,
07.
You would like to begin that beginning this July.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
So then that number should be 2007.
I'm 71 years old. I'd like to get started before I croak.
You don't look that old.
Trust me.
So, Senator Sharon, would you like to amend your bill?
I would like to offer that as an amendment.
So on line 1.6, the number being requested is $150,000. And on line 1.7, delete the 2007 and insert 2008. Delete 2008 and insert 2007. Is there any discussion of that amendment? Senator Lori?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering also, this refers to all three programs. Are we talking about replicating all three programs? So maybe we should try to clean.
Yeah, we do need to also clean up the language about the grantees since.
Do we want to handle that separately or together?
We might just need a few minutes to do that. So why don't we go ahead and act on this motion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yeah. So that amendment is adopted. Now, to clean up this other language about the program grantees.
The clone program.
Staff will figure it out here.
More programs.
There you go.
Circle of
women.
For programs. The clone is, Madam Chair, the language should be changed to reflect that the $150,000 would be for a grant to create a clone of the Circle of Women program in the counties of.
Hine, Kennebec, and Carleton. Is that correct, Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Pine, Kennebec, and Carleton.
Okay. So Senator Sharon moves this amendment, and the staff will read it for us.
Madam Chair, starting on line 1.7, let's see.
150,000.
two award grants beginning July 1, 2007 for programs that provide services to reduce fetal alcohol syndrome under Minnesota statute section 145.9266 in Pine, Kennebec, and Carlton counties. And then take out the following sentence.
Would it be, Madam Chair, may I pose a question?
Yes, Dr. Deinert.
Would it, since we're revising the language, since you are revising the language, would it be appropriate to add after to reduce fetal alcohol syndrome to also add the concepts of to improve parenting skills to maintain family integrity, something like that, so that it, this language of fetal alcohol syndrome goes way back to 1991. And that, as Susan Carlson's letter points out, that there are distinctions between MOFAS, which is focusing on fetal alcohol syndrome, and our program, which is trying to prevent drug usage of all kinds in subsequent pregnancies, but to improve parenting skills and keep mothers out of the criminal justice system and get them education and so on and so forth. And one of the handouts I handed out today is our last quarterly report to DHS, which lays out in more detail all of the things that Circle of Women is doing and how we're doing those things. And that's what I'd like to clone, that whole concept.
Well, I guess maybe you guys should have been doing a little more work on this bill before you put it in the hopper, huh?
Well, unhappily, at least I have been going down the path thinking that there was a sunset clause that was driving matters. I apologize for my oversights.
Well, I guess the concern is whether we actually have to go back into Minnesota statutes 145.9266 and change that language, which we don't actually have before us in this bill. So I think maybe if you want to work on that for a later amendment, Senator Sharon, I'm just not sure we're ready to do that here today. But we will take the amendment that you have made that is before us. So those in favor of that amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do you want to make a motion for the bill?
Of the committee.
I'd like to move the Senate File 964 be approved and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
You've heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you. Good luck to all of you.
Good.
Next on the agenda, we have Senate File 842, Fee for Service Inpatient Care for GMAC. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and members of the division, this bill is here because this bill would deal with existing funding. And this bill is here, and it needs just probably for most of you, even if you were here last time, a little bit of historical context. For the last several bienniums, we've worked very hard trying to figure out how we could garner the additional amount of DSH money at the federal level that was available for our hospitals. And the federal government raised the cap on the amount of DSH money that states could receive, but the caveat on it is, of course, that you have to match it. It's a Medicaid-type match. And we were in budget deficits. And But we were struggling to figure out how to get the money because we were afraid that if we didn't apply for it sometime within a few years of the opportunity, that we would lose the opportunity because the federal government was starting to face budget deficits also. And so we worked very hard, and we thought we had come up with a mechanism to do it using certified public expenditures. And those would be expenditures that are made by public hospitals to pay for uncompensated care that are funds that they either generate property tax dollars to pay for the uncompensated care or are other funds that they receive to pay for uncompensated care or to pay for hospital care for the poor that do not come through their Medicaid program. So we were moving along trying to get this money, and late in the session, the department came forward and said that they had received a letter from CMS saying that we could use our general assistance medical care expenditure to match the DSH dollars. And that if we did that, of course, then we wouldn't have to spend the DSH dollars on hospitals. We could spend it on whatever we wanted to. So this was pretty big wrinkle in the ointment. So we went into conference committee with the Senate position being that we use certified public expenditures and we give the money to the hospitals. The House position was that they use general assistance medical care and they spent the money in their bill on other things. In the conference committee, we agreed on a compromise that we would spend the money on the hospitals, but we would use the general assistance medical care money as the match. This bill is here because none of this DSH money has been awarded to us or given to the hospitals yet. And the reason is because we have not been able to get approval in our state plan for using the general assistance medical care hospital dollars because they are being awarded to health plans before they are spent on the hospital care at the hospital level. And the federal government is saying, and they have had kind of a tradition of saying that, you know, if you're limiting your DSH upper limit even by the amount of fee-for-service hospital care only. And so that's definitely kind of putting a lot of states at a disadvantage, but certainly putting this the structure of this in the last biennium to generate the DSH dollars is putting the receipt of those DSH dollars in jeopardy. And I might add that the DSH dollars were used to offset fairly large hospital cuts that were made in the budget bill in 2005. And so if we don't get the DSH money, well, I guess it's always hard to look back and say what would have happened, but I'm certain there would have been a lot more resistance to the level of hospital cuts. The Senate went into the conference committee with no hospital cuts and the DSH money for the hospitals. And we came back out with the DSH money, but fairly significant hospital cuts. And so this bill is a bill that I introduced to get this conversation on the table as to how in the world we're going to figure out how to fix this so that we can get the DSH money, not only for the future biennium, but for the past biennium. And this bill is simply suggesting that the general assistance medical care hospital portion be paid for on a fee-for-service basis. Now, I'm not sure whether we can actually go back and retroactively do that for the whole last year of the biennium. But it would seem to me that at least we ought to be able to think about whether we could do it going forward for the rest of the months we have left in the biennium to capture some of that hospital spending in order to be able to generate enough hospital spending through GMC to capture the DSH money. And so that's what I'm trying to accomplish with this bill. And we do have some people here to testify about this also, Madam Chair, who were around and can remember all of the effort we went through to try to figure out how to get this DSH money to the hospital. So I think it'd be good to hear from them.
All right. Before we begin our testimony, Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bergen, let me just clarify some things. So we would be attempting to capture money from a previous biennium. And is that money that's already been allocated to the hospitals or to some other source? Were those pass-throughs not, or I don't know if they'd be called pass-throughs, but were those allocations not made because of a hitch?
Senator Bergen.
Madam Chair and Senator Prettner-Solon, my understanding is that none of the DSH money's been distributed to any of the hospitals.
Wow.
And so my attempt here is to try to spend our GMC hospital dollars through a fee-for-service instead of through managed care for the rest of the biennium at least, in order to be able to then get our state plan approved for this fiscal year so that we could capture those DSH dollars and get those DSH dollars out to the hospitals.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
I'm confused.
One of the things we did do in the bill is we said we would only use the GAMC mechanism for this biennium. And after that, we would go to certified public expenditures because we felt like the use of the certified public, because the DSH money grows over time, that the use of the certified public expenditures was a safer mechanism to make sure that we would have enough state match or local match to be able to generate the revenue needed in the future to get the increase in the DSH money. But we still have this problem for now. I mean, you know, what's in the law for the next biennium doesn't solve the problem we have now.
So, Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, Senator Bergen, so this, we said that we would only use the GMC match in 2005. Is that what you're saying? Or we are saying we'll only use it for this biennium, and then we'll go back to the certified public expenditures. I'm not clear about that.
We said that we would use it for that biennium, and then when the next biennium began, we would use the certified public expenditures.
Okay. And so, Madam Chair, when we collect these dollars, if we're able to collect these dollars, will they then go back to the hospitals, or will they be collected for some other purpose, or how will we use these funds? I mean, does our previous distribution still work, or will we be using this differently?
Senator Bergen.
Madam Chair and Senator Prettner-Solon, I am not proposing that we go back and change the distribution of the money. I'm just trying to get the money so the hospitals that were expecting it can receive it.
Okay, and Madam Chair, one
Senator
other question.
You
made a comment about the health plans collecting it, and I didn't understand what that was.
Well,
either.
Because GMC is in, we have managed care contracts for GMC. The hospital portion of GMC then is in the contract with the health plans. The hospitals receive money when they have a hospitalization, but it's through a contract they have with a health plan. And so the way the federal government looks at it is we haven't given money to pay for hospital care. We've given money to health plans. And they do not allow any of the money that we give to health plans for hospital care to count even toward what we otherwise would be able to legitimately claim as an amount of spending that would generate a higher level of DSH. But this isn't trying to deal with that problem. I mean, there are recommendations that the Medicaid Commission has received, that they look at whether that's fair to the states that do have a lot of contracts with managed care, and I believe it's not fair. But that's a separate issue, bigger than the problem I'm trying to solve here. The problem I'm trying to solve here is just to get the GMC hospital dollars back into fee-for-service so that we can use it to generate the dish money that we were anticipating getting for the hospitals during the current biennium.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund. It seems unfair that the federal government would hold that against us, since they require us, don't they, to use the managed care programs for our public programs?
Well, you know, they all don't talk to each other. I mean, they want us to use managed care for our MA, but there's nothing that requires that we use it for GAMC.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I just want to commend you on being on top of this and doing what you can to correct this and bring these dollars to us.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Madam Chair and Senator Solon, I'm not sure that I've exactly found the most satisfactory solution here. I think the department thinks that this solution has some problems, but I don't see them coming forward with exactly a solution themselves. So at this point, I would say a solution is better than no solution.
All right. I know that there are a number of questions surrounding this, and with the committee's will, I'd like to offer opportunity to have a couple of those questions, and then we will get to the testimony. Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, are the feds going to let us do this retroactively? I mean, I guess I'm wondering, are they going to honor it retroactively if we go back? Because this is back to 05, so that's, you know, year and a half. So I'm wondering, and have any other states, you mentioned some other states, you didn't say names, but you mentioned other states maybe are having the same issues?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Fischbach, in terms of the other states, let me separate this bill from that discussion. What I meant to say, or what I was trying to explain, is that other states have got some of their hospital care in managed care. They have managed care contracts with providers like we do. Those states that have done that tend to be penalized in terms of what their upper limit is for DISH. That's a different problem. It's just a problem I wanted to make you aware of because it's somewhat related to the problem that our contracts with managed care and GMC are creating for us right now. So the federal government looks at it and they say, well, we don't allow spending in managed care to count for DISH anyplace. So then, even though we had a letter from the federal government saying that our GMC program could count as a DISH match and that they had done that for other states, they didn't apparently understand that our GMC money was in a managed care contract. And so now they're coming around and saying, oh, yeah, but we didn't mean that you could match it with GMC money if it was in a managed care contract. And apparently the department didn't understand that at the time. Certainly the legislature didn't understand that at the time. And so we thought by using the GMC money, even though it was in managed care, that the hospital portion could be used to match our federal DISH allocation. Now we're finding out after discussion with them, and we are one of the only states, well, I think we are the only state left in the union that hasn't had our state plan approved. And this is one of the items that is a bone of contention. Okay. My concern is we're gonna be done with this biennium pretty soon. We're not gonna have gotten our DISH money, and that'll be history. And oh well, the federal government will go on. But those of us who thought the hospitals were gonna get this money and the hospitals who thought they were gonna get this money end up without having gotten it.
Okay. And Senator Cloring.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, do we have the fiscal note for this? I'm assuming there's going to be some cost.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Fischbach, the department told us late yesterday that they would not be preparing a fiscal note for this bill for this committee, that they would prefer to do the fiscal note after the forecast, after the new forecast comes out. And the idea that I had behind this is know that it shouldn't cost any more money. We're spending GMC dollars on hospital care in the present biennium's budget, and we're just going to spend it differently under this bill. That we're not increasing the amount we're spending on it. We're just going to pay differently than we otherwise would have paid.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, the fee for service isn't going to increase. We're not going to have to retroactively go back and pay for those. See, well, my concern is Senator Berglund, if we do this and go retroactive for a year and a half and the feds don't follow through, then how do we deal? We're going to have some costs that we've incurred with changing from managed care to fee for service.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Fischbach, I realize that it's probably not this simple, but maybe we could just start at this level to think about it in order to get there from here. Today we're spending money, GMC money, on hospital care. We're doing it through a managed care contract. So in my mind, it's a matter of an accounting change. That instead of accounting for it through a managed care contract, we would be accounting for it on a fee-for-service basis.
All right, thank you.
The idea isn't that we go back and pay everybody all over again for money they've already received. The idea is that we simply have a different way that we account for the money that we're paying out. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And I think that's all the federal government is requiring us to do in order to be able to count this money.
All right, Senator Coring.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think my question has been answered. I guess I was trying to figure out in my mind. And so for a farm boy, so to try to simplify it for me, what we're trying to do is we're trying to come up with some money so at the state level so that we can get federal matching dollars. And then that's my first question. And the second question, how much money are we talking about here with the DISH money?
Oh, I can't remember, but it was a lot of money. I think it was in the neighborhood of like, well, not all of it. Not all of it was going to go to the hospitals right away because the department was requiring us to buy out an intergovernmental transfer that the federal government didn't like before we actually got the hospitals their money. So maybe when people come up to testify, they can refresh our memories about what money was going to pay off an intergovernmental transfer and how much was actually going to be received by the hospitals.
All right. This seems like a good time to entertain some testimony. Mr. Greenfield. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lee Greenfield. I'm a lobbyist for Hennepin County and the Hennepin County Medical Center. I'm in the role of working with the medical center and the hospital association that I'll be testifying. It's almost a question of where to begin. Originally, in attempts to access the DISH money, which is disproportional share money for hospitals. It's hospitals that have a disproportionate share of Medicaid program and other programs that go with it. We'll get into detail in a minute. That the DISH money is available for, with the recognition that these are safety net hospitals and the safety net function. That they will be uncompensated care and underpayments. And that money is then made available to help make the safety net hospitals whole or as close as possible as that gets. The Hospital Association had come out with a proposal, and these are numbers we had done some work on, to use certified public expenditure. And a certified public expenditure, just for those who are new and to remind others, you find an expenditure that was made by the hospital that is eligible for repayment with DISH money. And it's a little different than just Medicaid money. It's a little more expansive and purposefully done in federal law. And what it says is anything that serves for underpayment from the Medicaid program, and with our rateable reductions, we get underpayments, that can be made up with DSH money, or for poor people who don't pay you at all. And there's a special category if there is a state-only program that pays for hospitalization without any federal money involved, namely general assistance medical care. There's a rather unique situation, which is counterintuitive. It says you can count the expense of that program, the cost of providing services by the hospitals to the clients in the general assistance medical care program, but ignore the payment for the calculation of DSH. So general assistance medical care program acts as a boost. And this was a reward to those states that had state-only programs for these populations. When we then looked at what we could certify from just two of our safety net hospitals, Hennepin County Medical Center and Regents Hospital, we calculate, and actually we also use the Fairview University Hospital, and we calculated how much certified public expenditure we could find in a year for those three hospitals. We found just Hennepin County and Regents would generate much more than the available new DSH money that would become our way. As things ended up, the CMS was telling the department they had to get rid of, I guess, what was then Intergovernmental Transfer 2, which was a mechanism that we had started in the early 90s that they objected to because there was no local money in it. The local money disappeared at some point, and that was $12 million a year that the state was benefiting. And for the biennium, therefore, $24 million. And we said for the first biennium, we were willing to help out and let the state take that out of the DSH money, the biennium we're finishing now. And what was left, and when it was done, we said would be used to buy down the rateable reduction that was going on in this biennium from last year. And originally, the 6% rateable reduction that was added last year had been 9%. And we used what was left in the DSH money to reduce that to 6%. And so the numbers are around...
David's got them.
David, I'm sure, has them. But it's something like $40 million, $45 million. I just don't remember exactly what it was for the 2 years of the first of this biennium.
Mr. Godfrey?
Madam Chair, members, the first biennium, the DSH drawdown was going to be, the DSH claim was $46.3 million. And then, if I might, just to answer Senator Corrine's question about the amount of money going to the hospitals and DSH payments for 08-09, that amount of money, that is $33.9 million for the next biennium.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Greenfield.
Thank you. Chair, now, what was decided in the conference committee was that this biennium, they would use the department using general assistance medical care to access it, that money. And in future bienniums, we would use certified public expenditure to do it. Now, there are problems either way. We never took into account, the department didn't, that they could not use PMAP money to make the match. One time I thought there was still enough money in GAMC so that it still would have been able to find that, because $46.3 million isn't all that much in these programs. But I'm not sure of that, and that's something we'd have to look at if we have to separate them. Clearly, there was that much available for certified public expenditures if they were done through Hennepin County Medical Center and Regents, ignoring PMAP, because our staffs only track the fee-for-service. We don't know from the plans which is GAMC and which is MA or Minnesota Care. So our staff was only for certified public expenditures tracking fee-for-service. So it would clearly work in this biennium. The problem, and when you do this, you've had an expenditure that was made that's eligible to be paid for by the DISH money. You then certify that, essentially the county or the state or the hospital, if it's a public hospital, certifies that expenditure. And the feds then provide the federal share. In our state, it's 50-50 for it. So you get back half of that, and then you can do what you want with that half because it's already been spent for something that the feds agreed they'd pay a share of. Just how it then gets redistributed, and the beyond what we did in the this first biennium, it's redistributed among hospitals that have enough individual DISH room, and every hospital has a DISH upper limit, which is dependent on how much charity care they give, how much underpayment there is in Medicaid in the program, and GAMC. And that can be calculated for each one. And we have a formula on the books that distributes that money. There is going to be a slight complication since we've drastically changed the GAMC program. We leave it that way. A lot of what was used before wouldn't be able to be used in the future. And so whether we would have enough certified public expenditures, we have to recalculate on the basis of that change. That's something we should be doing in the next week or two to see if there's enough to do the certified public expenditures just in the two hospitals, which there's no question of.
Madam Chair, the other slight complication, if we didn't have enough complications already, is that the federal government is creating rules for how and what they will recognize as a certified public expenditure. And those rules are fairly restrictive, and there's been a lot of comment and pushback about those rules. And so we're not sure exactly where all of that will end up at in regard to how they might be changed at the federal level. So that's sort of this question mark out there that doesn't make this problem any easier to try to figure out how to resolve.
Okay. Senator Prettner-Sullivan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Greenfield, it's been a while since I've looked at this, and it's very complex. And so I can't remember if the certified public expenditures can only be those from public facilities. Is that true?
Madam Chair, Senator.
Mr. Greenfield.
Essentially, and that's why, and the status of Fairview University is in question to be able to do that. However, there's no question that HCMC can do it. And under current law, Regents can do it. If the changes were made that are currently being proposed by CMS, the rules changes were made, Regents wouldn't count. However, I can't believe that that's going to become law because there'd only be like five public hospitals left in the country.
Senator Prettner-Sullivan.
Madam Chair, Mr. Greenfield, I thought there were a few small rural hospitals. I know that
charges. The small ones.
They don't generate as much, but
they wouldn't generate.
Could they not
very much
also
in this.
Be used,
Mr. Greenfield?
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't think they generate enough because their DISH limit would be very small, and so the difference wouldn't be worth very much in calculations.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Greenfield, are we threatened with losing a lot of our disproportionate share money?
Mr. Greenfield?
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't think in the end that will happen. I think most of the proposed rule changes from CMS will not occur, whatever happens in the rule. Currently now, a majority of the House and a majority of the Senate have signed letters in opposition to the rule changes. And I believe that they will get some drastic changes in it before it's adopted. However, we don't know exactly what they're going to be, so it's very hard to determine how we're going to answer this, exactly what calculations or what sums will be exactly eligible. But that would be true even if we had done it all correctly, because this whole rule change is up for grabs right now.
Senator Berglund.
But, Madam Chair and Senator Prettner-Solon, what is clear is that the 2 years of DISH money that we were counting on for this biennium are definitely in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And, everyone will be watching the new rules, and everyone will be going back to their own books to try to figure out. But under the certified public expenditure scenario, we were only counting Hennepin, Regents, and Fairview for certified public expenditures, because it's just too, the smaller hospitals have too much deviation because the numbers are so small. A hospital might have something this year but not next year, and so we just didn't think including that in the equation would be helpful.
Okay. Are there any questions from other members of the committee? Mr. Greenfield.
Madam Chair, one other thing I will point out, and these are all numbers we have to check, but even if we just did GAMC fee-for-service for the last 6 months of the biennium, we should have more than enough certified public expenditures to, as the program currently exists, to meet for this biennium's need to use all the DISH money. But we've got to check all these and have them all ready and know which word will fit or not ahead of time. And I think I commend Senator Berglund for bringing this forth, because we're all sitting there wondering what's going to happen, and unless we're ready to provide numbers and work with the department, and the department's willing to work with us to get it done, this will all disappear.
Well, okay. Senator Sharon.
Just a question that if this moves to fee-for-service and away from the HMO, under that program, whatever the bill is what's paid. There is not a system that has a cost containment on those costs. Is that accurate?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, an awful lot of the people that come into the GAMC program come in because of a hospital admission. And so at that point in the person's care, you're dealing with a crisis. The idea of taking people who are in GAMC over a period of time and then moving them into Minnesota Care so they don't fall off of GAMC was something that we did during a previous biennium to kind of provide more continuity and more of a medical home where those kind of cost containment features could make a difference. But when you have someone that's just coming into a hospital because they haven't had any medical coverage to start with and they're in crisis, the principles of managed care are not as relevant. And I don't believe they offset the need for generating these DISH dollars. And I guess one could come to a different conclusion about it, but clearly the hospitals are not better off than they would have been with the DISH dollars. And so that's the other thing I just need to clarify is when we count GAMC at the state level, then we can count all of the expenditure, regardless of what hospital is receiving the money. When we count a certified public expenditure for the purposes of matching the DISH dollars, we can only count those GMC dollars and or other tax dollars that are being spent at quote-unquote a public hospital. And under the new rules, it would be only at Hennepin County. And so that was one of the reasons why, for this biennium, we took the option to use the GAMC dollars at the statewide level. And so I just think that's a little nuance that's important to understand. So even if we would change this now to just be certified public expenditures, we would have then only perhaps, at least what we know right now, only Hennepin County Medical Center expenditures to count. And, of course, we're counting this expenditure to match dollars that actually go out to hospitals all over the state.
Okay. Senator Berglund and members, I'd like to redirect your attention to page 4 of the bill, line 4.32. The Senate Counsel has advised that the first statutory reference there, 256B.09, should in fact read 256B.69. And I wonder if Senator Berglund would like to entertain that amendment.
Yeah, I'll make that technical motion.
Okay. On the amendment, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. Thank you. And with that, is there any further discussion? Senator Berglund.
Well, Madam Chair, I know there are folks here from the department, and they were here to answer any questions anyone might have. And I thought maybe you might have some for them in regard to this issue. And so before we finish discussing this topic today, I thought we would take that opportunity.
Senator Berglund, I think that you and Mr. Greenfield have done a most comprehensive job in addressing questions of the committee. Senator Berglund?
Well, I guess the question I would have for the department, since they seem to be quite concerned about this particular solution, is whether they have any other solution.
Okay. Does anyone from the department would care to come to the table and speak to that? Senator Berglund, I don't see anyone rushing forward.
Okay, well, then we will wait to see what in the world they come up with when they do the fiscal note for the
Is there, before we move on, is there someone in the back that wanted to come forward? Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ann Berg from the department in the Medicaid Director's Office. Just in response to Senator Berglund's question, I would just say we are looking at this issue along with the supplemental forecast. There may or may not be a proposal that deals with some of these issues as well.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Berglund.
So, Madam Chair, at this time I just ask that Senate File 842 be laid over, and maybe if we need to act fairly quickly on it, maybe it could be brought up later in the week after the forecast has been made public.
Okay. So is that – I'm unclear on what the motion is here, Senator Berglund.
Actually, I'm just requesting that we just not take action on this bill today. I mean, this would not – since this is for this biennium, I'm hoping we can solve it before we do the next budget.
Very good. All right. And with that, we will adjourn the meeting. No, 73. I didn't say that.